Chapter 11. The next morning, I called Travis Meyer's office to give Alice, his super-efficient, plump little secretary, Jack Tynor's details, so Meyer could start the paperwork. I was on the back porch of the new house, enjoying the morning air as I watched some workmen put the finishing touches on the new fence, now that it had been moved to the correct property line. In about 2 weeks, Whitmire's old place would be out of escrow, and from what the old woman said at the party the previous night, she'll be moved out next week and on her way to Florida. I guess that meant I should start thinking of this house as Ipsith's, and Whitmire's old place as Nyla May's house. Technically, they were all my houses, but it would be easier to keep things straight if we all referred to them as the house of which of my wives lived there. As I turned to go back into the house, my cell rang, and I saw it was Travis. "Hey, Meyer," I said into the receiver.
"Mr. Hill?"
I heard the lawyer's calm voice.
"It's my understanding you've offered to buy a third home."
"Yep," I said as I sipped my coffee. "Is that going to be a problem?"
"Oh, no,"
Meyer replied coolly.
"You have plenty of money in the bank, and several of the investments I've made on your behalf are doing well. However, as we get closer to the end of the year, we have to consider tax season. I'd like to list your properties as investments that you plan to rent out. I assume your lady friends are residing in the homes?"
"That's right," I agreed, as I saw where Travis was going with this line of questions. We would have to write up rental agreements or something like that.
"You're a step ahead of me, Mr. Hill,"
Travis chuckled.
"I would also have to set up bank accounts in the lady's name and pay them through one of the LLCs we've set up so they appear to have incomes on paper."
"That's good," I nodded as I thought about the idea. "That way they can manage their living expenses however they like. Would $50,000 a year for each of them be enough?"
"That would be close to the median expected income for a single woman,"
the lawyer agreed.
"And if you decide to give them more than that, we can make it appear as a raise in the future."
"Sounds good, Meyer," I said. "Is there anything else?"
"That's all for now,"
Meyer concluded.
"Have a good day."
The CPA hung up the phone, and I went into the house and thought about what my next move should be. Ipsith was at the kitchen sink as she washed up from breakfast, while Bora played with the garms on the kitchen floor. "Hey, baby," I said as I looked up a number on my phone. "I'm going to call those Amish guys and set it up for them to put a porch on the back of the trailer."
"Oh, that sounds lovely, my king."
The elven woman smiled at me as she rinsed the suds off some plates. "I'm thinking about going back to the gloom tonight," I added. "We still have a few days before we're supposed to be back at the encampment, but there are some things I want to look into before we meet with Ekname." I avoided the words fight, battle, or anything to do with Ursinger. Ipsith knew what I was about to do, but I also knew she was anxious about me confronting her half-brother. Ipsith looked at me with her violet eyes a little wide, and she came over to me with hands still covered in soap and dishwater. The petite woman wrapped her slender arms around me and laid her head on my chest.
"Then that is what you must do,"
Ipsith replied with a voice thick with emotion. "We'll be back before you know it," I said in a light tone, but Ipsith held me even tighter. I squeezed her close to reassure my first wife it would be okay.
"All will be well,"
Bulra said softly as she got up and placed a comforting hand on the white-haired woman's shoulder.
"I saw it in a vision. Eddie is a light that will dispel the darkness. You saw that?"
Ipsith looked up at the shaman but didn't let go of me.
"Yes."
Bulra smiled warmly as she looked at me.
"Eddie was there when I had the vision. He can tell you."
"I was." I nodded, but I left out the part where the orcish woman saw what would happen if we didn't stop Ursinger. "And it's not going to be just me. There's going to be hundreds of warriors and sorcerers with us. And I'll be back home at least once before any of that happens. There's still some time before we're supposed to meet with the Dolrath for battle. And even then, I'll come home to you. Okay?"
"Okay,"
Ipsith murmured, and she sniffled a little to rein in her emotions.
"You are the bravest warrior I know. I'm sure you'll come home to me."
"To both of you," I grinned as I placed a hand on her smooth belly. "And you'll have Bulra and the Garms here with you for company, too. That's a nice change, isn't it?"
"Yes, beloved."
The curvy elf smiled. "Oh," I said as another thought hit me. "Use the card to get Bulra some clothes and whatever. That'll be fun. You two out on a shopping spree. Get yourself something nice, too. And now that the fence is all fixed up, you can keep Growler and Dread in the backyard here."
"Yes, my king,"
Ipsith replied.
"And I'll keep Dread off the furniture when I let them in on the colder nights."
"While you're out, you can pick them up some dog beds for the living room." I smiled because I knew how much she liked to spoil them. Just make sure to get the big ones they can grow into. I'm going to go over to the trailer and start making preparations with Amrila and Nilame. I kissed my wife and then walked over to the old trailer. I still loved the beat-up mobile home, since it was where my new life started. Then I paused outside long enough to call the Amish contractors and set up a day for them to come give me an estimate. I wasn't sure if I'd be back in time, but it wasn't anything Ibsith couldn't handle. I'd just tell her the price range I felt was reasonable, and I'd be able to trust her to stick to it. Inside the trailer, I found Amrila and Nilame. My second wife had her whetstone out and honed the edge of her favorite sword, and she was wearing some fishnets under a pair of daisy dukes and her torn black sweater. Nilame was making herself a cup of coffee, and she looked like the world's sexiest tomboy in a cropped sweatshirt and light-washed jeans, with her long, dark hair pulled back in a high ponytail. "Morning, ladies," I said as I walked in and took a moment to kiss them both.
"Morning, husband,"
Nilame smiled.
"Partner,"
Amrila said simply as she looked up at me with dark, hooded eyes. "I'm thinking we should go down today," I said as I stood in the middle of the living room, and the Dolrath woman sat on the couch next to Amrila to listen. "We still need more information on this Belzat fucker. If that's where Ursinger's getting his powers from, then the more we know about the demon, the better we'll be able to fight back. Any ideas?"
"The Koradu have a lot of scholars,"
Nilame offered.
"But so far, they've come up dry on any information about Belzat."
"We could talk to Scourge,"
the red-skinned woman replied.
"He doesn't talk about it much, but he was raised deep in the Twilight region, near access points to the Deeper Dark. If he doesn't know something, he might know where we can find information."
"That's good." I nodded as I rubbed my chin. "We can start in Bermshire, which is closer than the Koradu territory. And we can see if he's had any luck getting members of the Resistance to join our forces while we're at it." The three of us spent the rest of the morning checking our gear and gathered anything we thought we would need. Nilame and I cleaned our guns, and I made sure to check over the high-point pistol that I usually left with Ibsith. Once our canteens were filled, and our backpacks were filled with trail food, spare mags, and ammo, we went over to Ibsith's house for a family dinner. My first wife went all out, but she clearly kept in mind that we'd have a long walk ahead of us. The white-haired woman made chicken breasts with a crust of fragrant herbs, a huge salad with spinach, and a homemade dressing of oil and balsamic vinegar with delicious seasonings. Then she rounded it all out with sweet potato fries. It was a healthy dinner, sure, but it all tasted amazing, and the chicken was juicy and perfectly seasoned. We made light conversation as we ate, and Ibsith had made some fresh lemonade for us, too.
"Do you think your Zenkari friend will be able to help you all find out about the Demon Lord?"
Bora asked as she speared a chunk of tomato with her fork. "You never know what kind of information Scourge might have," I replied as I took a sip of lemonade. "And if he doesn't know, he's the kind of guy who always knows a guy."
"Oh, I wish I could meet this Scourge,"
Ibsith said in a whimsical tone.
"You all talk so much about him and Bakoth. I feel like I know them already." "I think Scourge would like you,"
Amrila commented around a mouthful of chicken.
"You take everything you do to the level of art. Food, gardening, the way you keep the houses. He'd worship you." "That's the nicest thing you've ever said."
The violet-eyed woman giggled and blushed.
"Does his wife not do the same?"
"Scourge doesn't have a wife," I snorted. "He doesn't seem interested in that kind of thing. He always looks a little confused when romance or sex comes up, like it's just not something he thinks about."
"Oh, that must be terribly lonely,"
Ibsith replied in a sympathetic voice.
"A poor man."
"He doesn't seem to mind,"
Nilame shrugged as she popped a fry in her mouth.
"Hopefully he's in Bermshire so we won't have to go hunt him down."
"Yeah," I nodded. "But Grok always seems to know where to find him. We still have some time before we have to be back at the encampment, so we can leave a message with Grok and see about some other things. Maybe have him meet us in the Koradu land so we're not wasting time waiting around."
"It's a shame the knowledge for seer stones was lost,"
Bulra chimed in as she cut a delicate bite of chicken with her fork and knife.
"That's how the chiefs communicated in the Great War against the Demon Lords. But the lost tribe of dwarves took that knowledge with them when they disappeared."
"Seer stones?" I repeated as I looked at the mystic intently. Whatever that was, it sounded promising, and I happened to know some lost dwarves.
"They were magical jewels that allowed the holder to speak with others at a great distance,"
Bora explained, and she was clearly not aware of how much of a bombshell she'd just dropped.
"They've been lost to time, but they figure into some of the obscure versions of the legends about the wars."
I tucked this information away for the next time I spoke with Sagor.
"Sounds like a cell phone,"
Ibsith said as she shot a look at me from across the table. The white-haired woman knew about the dwarves in the southern tunnels, but I was glad she didn't say anything out loud. We were still getting to know the Orc Shaman, and I wasn't ready to tell her about Sagor and the others just yet. It kinda does, I said vaguely, and then I sighed as I put down my fork. That was amazing, baby. It might have been one of the best dinners you've ever made.
Oh, thank you, my king.
Ipsith smiled with a rosy blush on her cheeks.
I wanted to send you off with a full stomach.
It was perfection.
Nylame agreed. After dinner, Amrila, Nylame, and I said goodbye to Ipsith and Bulra, and I fed and watered Growler and Dread one last time. Then we headed back to the trailer for our gear and headed out into the backyard. My mind was still on the idea of seer stones. I knew the dwarves probably didn't have any on hand, because I couldn't imagine Sagor wouldn't have mentioned it before now if they did. The eldest dwarf saw me as his successor, the next protector of the surface tunnels. That's why he gave me the ring that protected us from the traps all over the old citadel. But if they still had access to the information in an old book or scroll, Becklin would be able to find it, and maybe figure out how to make some. If I could communicate with Scourge, Bakoth, or Eknome at a moment's notice, that could be a game-changer. I could even leave one with Ipsith, since my cell wouldn't work in the gloom. Let's see the dwarves real quick, I said once we were down in the tunnels. They're on the way, and I'd like to check in with them.
Following you, Eddie,
Nylame replied in a mild tone. We made our way to the living quarter of the dwarves, and we found all four of them in their workroom, as they shared a meal at a long table. Each of them drank from a bottle of the beer I'd brought on my last visit, and their plates were piled high with what looked like mostly vegetables. Sorry to interrupt your dinner. I apologized as the ladies and I came into the workspace.
Friend Eddie!
Sagor smiled, and his long white beard was tucked into his tunic to keep it out of the way as he ate.
You're always welcome. Care to join us?
Oh, we just ate,
Amrila replied as she unenthusiastically eyed the vegetarian meal.
But thank you for the offer.
Come and sit anyway.
Turek gestured to some open chairs at the table.
To what do we owe the pleasure?
My wives and I sat down in the short chairs that were not made for taller races. Amrila didn't have much trouble, but I wasn't able to fit my knees under the table, and it was more than a little awkward. I just wanted to check in, and I had a question for you all to research, I replied.
I'm glad you came, Becklin piped up. I've discovered the purpose of the ring you left with us. I'll go fetch it.
The little red-headed man got up from the table and dashed off.
I trust you're well, demon.
Dorm grumbled at Amrila as she sat down near him.
Cursed any unwary travellers lately?
Not lately,
the horned woman sighed.
But the night is young. It must be lovely to have such a fine beard to save your crumbs in for a midnight snack.
Dorm involuntarily looked down at his iron-grey beard to check for crumbs, but then he realized Amrila had tricked him into doing that, and he glowered at her as she laughed. Before the surly dwarf could retort, Becklin came back and handed me the ring with the large cobaltite stone.
You're the proud owner of a ring with fire resistance,
the tiny man squeaked.
Really?
I asked as I looked at the ring. How does that work?
The charm protects the wearer from fire,
Dora muttered as if it should have been obvious. Cool, I snorted, and I put the ring on. I'm not planning to run into any burning houses anytime soon, but that seems useful. Thank you, Becklin.
What was your question, Eddie?
Sagor asked as he sipped from his beer. Well, I only just found out about them myself, I answered, and I tried to adjust myself in the short chair. But I wanted to know if you guys had ever heard of seer stones. The dwarves all looked at each other for a moment in silence. I knew they'd all grown up in the citadel and the surface tunnels, so they were only the descendants of the original lost tribe, but I held my breath as I waited for them to reply.
The ancient ones destroyed their sits,
Dorum said finally.
This was before they migrated to this place. After the great war against the demon lords, when the night elves began their war of aggression to dominate the gloom, the seer stones were destroyed as a symbol of defiance.
I see, I replied, but I was a little disappointed. I can understand why you may not want to, but is there a way to make more? I'm not trying to be insensitive here, but they could be a really useful tool now.
Nothing is impossible,
Becklin said as he looked at me.
Our ancestors prize knowledge, and it's likely they wouldn't have destroyed all records of the process.
I think we can comb through the books we have and see if there's a way,
Sagor replied.
But it will take time. Even with a record of the process, we're not as skilled as the old ones, though I think we could try.
Thank you. I nodded as a sense of relief spread through me. I know I've asked a lot of the four of you in the past.
At least we know you'll try to do some good with them.
Doram grumbled as he downed the last of his beer.
My current projects have stalled, so I'll look into the matter personally.
That's oddly generous of you.
Amrila grinned.
You still smell us, Ulfur.
The grey old dwarf retorted.
That's more like it.
The horned woman chuckled.
I know, there is old enmity between our people.
Nyleme said as she looked around at the lost dwarves.
But I'm sure my people will be grateful for all that you have done for the Gloom. If you should ever want to return, you'll be welcome in the lands of the Dolrath.
Our time is past.
Sagor let out a heavy sigh, and I noticed again the old man looked tired.
It's better that we're forgotten, but your thanks, great lady, is more than enough.
Hear, hear!
Torek exclaimed in a hearty tone, and he raised his beer. We should get going and let you finish dinner, I said as I gratefully stood up from the chair and stretched my legs. Thank you all so much. We said our goodbyes to the dwarves, and Doram and Amrila took a moment to trade a final few insults. Then my wives and I headed down into the Dolrath lands, past the encampment, and headed to the tunnels that led to Bermshire. The little village at the edge of the Yeni territory looked like it always did. Ursinger's forces didn't venture this far south often. Even though it was a farming community, I got the impression the Mad Chief didn't see it as an important one, and that gave the people of Bermshire a measure of freedom. The three of us headed to Grok's Tavern, and we were surprised to see Scourge at one of the tables, and already several ales in.
Eddie.
The Zhenkari thief slurred slightly as we joined him at his table.
I hadn't expected to see you so soon.
The dark-skinned man raised his hand for a barmaid to come over, and then turned back to us.
You ladies look well,
Scourge continued, and he was clearly a little tipsy.
You look a little rumpled, my friend.
Amrila snorted, and it was true. Scourge was usually neat, and I was impressed with how clean his clothes and leather armor always seemed to be. But right now, the Zhenkari man looked as though he'd been traveling, and his short black hair was tousled.
It's been a long day, and I am determined to get drunk,
Scourge replied as he took a pull from his metal tankard.
But it all turned out well. I was able to convince one of the leaders of the Thieves' Guild that our cause would benefit her, and together we killed the leader of the other guild who disagreed. Let's celebrate!
When the older Night Elf woman came up to our table, she wordlessly placed another tankard in front of Scourge.
Grok asked me to remind you that you are welcome to drink your fill,
the wrinkled old woman stated in a matter-of-fact tone.
But you'll tolerate no fighting if you feel frisky later on.
My fighting is done for the day, m'lady,
the thief grinned.
Would you be so kind as to bring some ale for my friends? They wish to get drunk with me. Put it on my tab.
The old woman rolled her eyes, but she went back to the bar to fetch the drinks anyway.
How princely of you,
Amrila smirked.
Of course,
the slinky man replied with a grand flourish of his hand.
Now, I know you didn't come all this way just to drink with me. What's on your mind, Eddie?
We wanted to find some information about this demon, Belzat, I answered. Scourge suddenly looked very sober, and he quickly raised his index finger to his lips.
Dear lad,
the thief said in a grave tone,
the first rule of demons is to never speak their names. That's probably not his true name, but it is best to be cautious all the same.
But do you know anything about this creature?
Nyleme asked as she leaned her forearms on the table.
Anything that might help?
I do not.
Scourge shook his head.
But if you want to know about a demon, it is best to ask a demon.
Do you happen to know a demon? I asked, though I knew he and Amrila were both half-demon.
Just my mother,
the Zhenkari man sighed as his shoulders slumped.
But she isn't exactly the maternal type.
Just then, the barmaid brought over three more tankards and set them on the table.
Behave yourselves,
the wrinkled elf said before she walked away.
Your mother is an actual demon,
Amrila whispered as she leaned towards Scourge.
Why have you never said anything?
It doesn't really come up in polite conversation now, does it?
The horned man shrugged. Wait, I said to my Zhenkari wife in a low voice as I pulled the tankard toward me. Isn't one of your parents a demon too? I thought that's how it works with Zenkari.
No!
The red-skinned woman shook her head.
My father was Zenkari, my mother was a night elf.
Doesn't that make you half night elf? I asked with a confused frown.
Not in the gloom, unfortunately.
Nyla May replied as she sipped her beer.
Zenkari are always considered Zenkari. Their children retain the traits of their Zenkari parents and they have difficulty blending in with other cultures.
So, does that mean you were raised by your father? I asked Scourge. No. The gray-skinned man shook his head and had a haunted look in his eyes. My mother reared me in a shack at the edge of the deeper dark, but I left the twilight as soon as I started to approach manhood.
Do you think she would help us, though?
I pressed. I could tell the topic bothered Scourge, but it was important for us to understand the source of Ursinger's power.
She might, the Zenkari man snorted. If we catch her in a pleasant mood and bring her a gift, but I have to warn you, my mother is terrifying.
I wouldn't ask if there was another clear option. I said in an apologetic tone,
get drunk with me,
Scourge replied as he took a large swig of ale.
And tomorrow I'll take you to her. Anything to help a friend and end the Mad Chief's reign.
I'll drink to that,
Amrila grinned.
Same here.
Nyla May seconded as she drank deeply from her tankard. The four of us played a drinking game that Scourge suggested to lighten the mood. It had complicated rules, but Scourge and Amrila were both familiar with it, and they went easy on Nyla May and I until we understood how to play. It involved a pair of dice, and by the end, I'd even won a few rounds. It didn't take long before I felt the effects of the alcohol, and when the ladies got up to get more ale, I dug around in my pack for some trail mix to help absorb the alcohol and found the bag of dried herbs the Elder Grimthorn had given me ages ago. Huh, I said as I brought out the cloth bag. I forgot I had this. It looks like tea. Is that what it is? I showed the bag to Scourge, and the Zenkari man let out a bark of laughter when he looked inside it.
It's not tea, the thief replied with a sly smile. This could fetch you a small fortune in the capital. It's an aphrodisiac. Quite rare, actually.
Really? I blinked, and because I was tipsy, the idea seemed kind of fun as I looked over at my wives at the bar.
Go easy, friend, Scourge chuckled. It's my understanding that it's very strong.
We all drank some more as we talked and joked together, but I also made sure to secure a room in the tavern so we could sleep it off before we headed into the twilight the next day.
I think I've had my fill, friends, Scourge said after a while. I'm going up to my room, but thank you. It's been a long time since I've enjoyed getting drunk with good friends.
Then the slinky man stumbled upstairs, and it was just my wives and me. Nyla May's face had a slight flush from all the ale, and I felt the warm, pleasant euphoria from the drink myself.
Hey, partner.
Amrila suddenly purred as she turned toward me.
Would you like to see me kiss Nyla May?
Fuck, yes I did. I looked over at my Dolrath wife to gauge her response to this saucy question, and I wasn't left in doubt for long.